So tonight what we're going to do is we're going to start with an introduction to the book of Romans, sort of a literary introduction, and then we'll get into the first chapter a little bit. Not very far tonight into the first chapter. We'll get into the first chapter a little bit. And the idea of the class is that over the first 10 weeks, we'll cover the first half of the book of Romans. We're just gonna roll through it. We're just gonna read through the book of Romans, and if I see some interesting things, I'll tell you what I think about it along the way. That's the idea. And if you have some questions, you can ask them, and maybe we'll figure something out. And we'll make it about halfway through, and then it'll be the fall festivals, and then after the fall festivals, I'll go to Israel, and then after I get back from Israel, it'll be Thanksgiving. And then it'll be Hanukkah. Well, I don't know. We'll start sometime in the fall again. We'll start some probably in November. We'll probably pick up for another 10 weeks in November. But don't hold me to that. It might be December. It might be January. We'll find out. Point is that this is a part one and a part two class on the book of Romans. Okay? All right. Great. So let's start with Romans. Let's start with the Romans. Rome, it's the capital of the world. Rome, it's the big imperial center there in Italy. And Paul is sending an epistle. He's writing a letter to some people that he apparently knows in Rome, right? And he gives a list. We get a list at the end of the book of Romans of everybody that he does know. He lists off every name of whoever he knows there among the believing community in Rome. So what we have is we have believers in Rome. Looks like, I guess, if we look at the list in the back, about a third of those names are definitely Jewish. Definitely Jewish believers. So the rest, we don't know. They could be Jewish. They could be not Jewish. So in other words, you have a mixed community of Jews and Gentiles who are believers in Yeshua, believers in Jesus, living in the city of Rome, and Paul is writing them an epistle. So, who brought the gospel to Rome in the first place? How did these believers get to Rome in the first place? Well, the traditional answer is that Peter and Paul started the church of Rome. Well, right? That's not really the case. Instead, the gospel arrived in Rome long before Paul did. Paul has never been to Rome when he writes this epistle. He's never yet been to the capital. And Paul arrived in Rome before Peter did. So who brought the gospel to Rome? And we get the answer from the book of Acts, actually. So if you want to turn over to the book of Acts, Acts chapter 2, you'll find on that first day of Shavuot in Acts chapter 2. Where it says, they were amazed and astonished in verse 7, saying, are not these men all Galileans who are speaking? How is it that we cheer them in his own language, in our own language to which we're born? And these are all Jews here in the temple. You understand these are Jewish people in the temple on the day of Shavuot, the day of Pentecost. And they're listening to Peter's sermon and to the apostles and so forth. And they're saying, hey, look, we're all Jewish, but we're all hearing that we're from the diaspora. And we speak these different languages out in the diaspora. And so we're hearing them speak in the languages with which we're familiar. Parthians, Medes, Elamites, residents of Mesopotamia, Judea, Cappadocia, Pontus, Asia, Phrygia, Pamphylia, Egypt, the districts of Libya around Cyrene, and visitors from Rome. There we go. Visitors from Rome. What kind of visitors from Rome? Both Jews and proselytes. So here is our first contact with potential Roman believers. This is how the gospel gets to Rome in the first place. That's what we have. Jews and proselytes. Actually, in the epistle of the Clementine homilies, there's an apocryphal story, at least, in Clementine homilies, there's an apocryphal story that Barnabas is the first of the apostles to carry the message to Rome, to carry the message of the gospel to Rome. We don't know that. That's like a work of fiction in some ways. But Jews and proselytes. So we have two kinds of believers in Rome, two kinds of people constituting the Jewish community, Jews and proselytes. And so I want to break down the people groups for us, because to really understand the book of Romans, you have to understand the categories. We're going to put everybody in a box. Okay? So you have two kinds of people in the world. Jews, on the one hand, and Gentiles, on the other hand. All right, but that's too simple. So we're going to make subcategories. We also have two kinds of Jews and two kinds of Gentiles. All right? So two kinds of Jews. There's Jews by birth. In other words, your mom was Jewish. It's the only way that you get to be a Jew by birth. Your mom was Jewish. All right? First century halakha. All right? Or, secondly, you went through a legal conversion to become Jewish, which is kind of like changing your nationality. Like, for example, if I wanted to go to Canada and take advantage of their healthcare system, I would have to become a Canadian citizen, right? Okay. Well, if I wanted to become Jewish, I would need to become a Jewish citizen, so to speak. This is a legal conversion. This is called a legal conversion to become a proselyte. Someone who becomes Jewish, was not Jewish, was not born Jewish, but becomes Jewish, is called a proselyte. All right? And the proselyte then is considered Jewish in every regard, and his children, well, her children, will be natural Jews. Will not be proselytes, but they will be born Jewish. All right, so that's two kinds of Jews. All right, then we also have two kinds of Gentiles. Now, 99.9% of all Gentiles fall into a very broad category called idolaters in the first century, meaning that they worship some, you know, form of polytheism. They do not worship the God of Israel. And in fact, under Roman law, to be a Gentile and not an idolater is illegal. You can't be an atheist. You can't say, well, I don't believe in the gods, because that's illegal. You have to believe in the gods and worship the gods and pay your dues and participate in the temples. And you can't say, well, I believe there's only one God. I mean, you could say that. You could say, I believe there's only one God, but you still have to worship the others. Because you could be from a Platonic school of philosophy who generally believes in monotheism, but you still worship the gods, right? So, 99.9% of all Gentiles then, once again, are in this category, this very broad category we call idolaters. But there's a very small fraction of people who are Gentiles who are attracted to Judaism. They are attracted to the God of Israel, and they like the Bible, and they like learning with Jewish people. They like learning the Torah, and maybe keep the Sabbath a little bit, and maybe keep kosher a little bit, maybe. And they don't worship the gods so much, the idols so much, because they've come to a conviction that the God of Israel is the one true God. For example, our big example from the book of Acts, you know, Cornelius the centurion, he's a Roman centurion, and it specifically calls him a God-fearer. So this is a small category, it's a small but significant category of Gentiles called God-fearers. Now here's the problem with being a God-fearer, it's illegal. Judaism is a legal religion in the Roman Empire. It has, because it's an ancient religion. It was around before Rome was an empire. And so Judaism is an accepted legal religion. And it's permissible under Roman law to practice Judaism and not worship the gods if you are Jewish. And there are two ways to be Jewish. You're born Jewish, or you go through a legal conversion to become Jewish, and the Roman government respects both mechanisms and both ways of being Jewish. However, to be a God-fearer, to be a Gentile, to be a Roman who just says, well, I don't worship the Roman gods anymore, that's disloyalty. In fact, that's treasonous. To not worship the gods of Rome, that's inviting the gods of Rome to smite Rome. You know, and so it's illegal, and you can get in a lot of trouble. And when we get up to the year 66 and the fire of Rome and Nero's purges, in the year 90, in Domitian's purges, this is what it's all about. It's not the emperors that brought these terrible persecutions down were not so much incensed at the Jewish people, and the persecutions weren't directed against Jews. They were directed against God-fearers who had, in the words of the emperors, drifted into Jewish ways. Okay, so that's our potential readership for the book of Romans. We can take a little bit of a look at the Jewish community there in Rome. It's one of the largest in the world at this time, outside of the land of Israel, with maybe three big population centers, if I'm remembering this correctly. The biggest population center of Jewish people outside of the land of Israel in the days of the apostles is, of course, first and foremost, Alexandria, Egypt. Huge Jewish population center in Alexandria, Egypt. Then, right up there is Antioch. Antioch, where the gospel first took root outside of the land of Israel. Remember the story when Paul and Barnabas end up serving in Antioch, and this is where the name Christians was first coined. Right. And then the third largest Jewish center outside of the land of Israel in those days, Rome itself. And we have a great description by the first century philosopher Philo, a Jew from Alexandria. He gives us a great description. It says, the great section of Rome, which is on the other side of the Tiber River, was occupied and inhabited by the Jews. So they have their own quarter, the Jewish quarter of Rome, so to speak. They were mostly Roman citizens. What? Yeah, like Paul. Remember, Paul's a Roman citizen? But that doesn't mean they're Italian. You don't have to be an Italian to be a Roman citizen. Instead, they're emancipated slaves who were brought to Italy as captives. See, back in the year 63, there was a civil war between some of the descendants of the Maccabees in the land of Israel, a civil war over who would be the king of Israel among these Hasmonean kings. And a proselyte named Antipater invited Pompey to, since he was in the neighborhood with his legion, invited him to come to Jerusalem and settle the civil war. And ever since then, the land of Israel, the Jewish people in Judea and Galilee, were under the control of the Roman Empire, as you know, at the start of the Gospels. This is the setting for the Gospels. Well, at the time that Pompey conquered Jerusalem and put an end to this civil war and made Judea into a Roman province, Roman territory, he took a lot of Jewish people captive and took them into slavery. And a generation later, these Jews were emancipated, their children were emancipated, which means that the people who owned them, released them. And many of them, on their emancipation, because they were emancipated by Roman citizens, they automatically received Roman citizenship themselves. This is how Paul of Tarsus probably received his Roman citizenship. He's probably the son of Jewish people who were taken captive by the Romans back under Pompey. So, they were brought to Italy as captives. They were freed by those who had brought them for slaves without ever having been forced to change their heritage or national observances. They had synagogues, many synagogues in Rome. They attended them regularly, especially on the Holy Sabbath days. They regularly contributed sacred sums of money from their first fruits and sent them to Jerusalem by the hands of those who were to conduct the sacrifices. So the Roman Jewish community is a wealthy Jewish community that's supporting Jerusalem, supporting the temple, supporting the priesthood, and obviously there in Rome, a politically powerful Jewish community. Archaeological evidence, which is based on tomb inscriptions, indicates that you had tens of thousands of Jews living in the Roman quarter in first century Rome. So it's a very large community. And so we have to imagine, now if we're just going to imagine a little bit with me, Paul has never been there. Paul's never been to Rome. And that's significant because Paul, as you know, considers himself to be the apostle to the Gentiles. What that means is that Paul has this idea that, and you know, it's actually an idea that the other apostles have now endorsed, this idea that Gentiles don't need to become Jewish in order to be part of the kingdom of heaven or to be a disciple of Yeshua. Now, this is a radical idea. It's been endorsed by James and John and Peter. However, it's not popular among the rest of the Jewish believers. The rest of the Jewish believers, outside of Paul's little school here, are still teaching that if a Gentile, an idolater, or a God-fearer, wants to become part of our group, the kingdom, he needs to, first of all, become Jewish. Because after all, Messiah is king of the who? King of the Jews, right? You want to be part of Israel, you got to be part of Israel. You know, ante up here. This is a big conflict in the New Testament, as you know. It's a big conflict in the book of Acts. So Paul, when we're reading the epistles of Paul, we're reading epistles that are written to communities that he started. Not so with Romans. He's writing to the Romans, he's writing to a community that he did not start. And so we have to assume, therefore, that when the gospel took root in Rome, it took root under the auspices of the apostolic voice that was opposed to Paul. In other words, the early Roman believers were all Jewish, of course. I mean, that's, they're Jews or proselytes, that we saw in Acts. And so Gentiles that were wanting to join, Gentiles that would be wanting to join the sect that they would be reaching out to would have to also become Jewish. So initially, we would expect most of the Jews in Rome, or most of the believers in Rome to be Jewish. That would be our initial expectation. In fact, that would be our initial expectation, not just for Rome, but for anywhere where Paul has not been. Paul, Barnabas, that crew. Okay. Acts 15 hasn't happened yet. So we're still, you know, as I'm telling the story, Acts 15 has not yet happened. It's about to. But we're looking around the year 49, Common Era right now. So I have some interesting quotes from church fathers, two interesting quotes from church fathers regarding the early believers in Rome that support this theory of mine. First of all, John Damascene, he says, many from among the Jews had believed, as he's describing the early, the beginning of the Church of Rome. He says, many from the Jews had believed, but they still held in conscience the laws after faith. They kept the observance of foods and so on. So John Damascene, preserves the tradition that the early Roman believers were Jewish and they were, you know, they were observant. They were Torah observant. Of course, that should go without saying. All right. Here's another guy. I don't know how to say his name. He says, there were Jews living in Rome in the times of the apostles. And those Jews who had believed passed on to the Romans, now we're talking Gentiles, passed on to the Romans the tradition that they ought to profess Christ, but keep the law. They accepted faith in Christ, though according to the Jewish rite. Those who led the Romans to faith had mixed it up with the law because they were Jews. So, he has the historical evidence that, you know, what's being practiced in Rome is Messianic Judaism, as we would term it. But he thinks that's he wants to apologize for that a little bit. Yes?
I was about to say an Ambrosiaster, but I'm not sure that's
how. I like that. Ambrosiaster.
Yeah,
Ambrosiaster. That was Ambrosiaster, for those of you who are wondering. Great. Okay, so, does this mean that all the believers in Rome are Jewish or proselyte? I would say pretty much, but it can't be all of them. Because it's just not possible for everybody to become Jewish. I mean, if there's, especially in Roman society, it's kind of a scandal to abandon the gods. And if you're going to hold any sort of official posting or anything like that, if you're in politics, if, it doesn't look good. it really isn't going to help your career to become Jewish. There's all sorts of social pressures which would make conversion impossible. And so there has to be an outer circle, just like we see in every synagogue that Paul attends. Every time he goes to a town,